They do have Sundays free.
Have Sundays free.
Pentecostals sing, they sing to heaven.
Sing to heaven.
Coptics have the book of scrolls. Numerologists count, they count to seven.
5, 6, 7.
Atheists have rock and roll.
For atheists,
there's no good news.
They'll never sing a song of faith.
In their songs,
they have a rule.
The he is always lowercase. The he is always lowercase.
Atheist.
Atheist.
Don't have no songs.
Christians have
their hymns and pages.
Hymns and pages.
Hava Megillahs for the Jews.
For the Jews.
Baptists have the Rock of Ages.
Rock of Ages.
Atheists just sing the blues.
Catholics
dress up for mass
and listen to
Gregorian chants.
Atheists just take a pass.
Watch football in their underpants. Watch football in their underpants.
Atheists.
Don't have no songs.
Don't have no songs.
This is Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz, and this is KBOO Portland.
Black Care Matters, the podcast where we honor the unique experiences of Black nurses working in the Pacific Northwest. And recognizing that Black lives matter, it's crucial that the care for these nurses also matters.
My eyes go to this huge swastika tattooed on this white man's back.
These nurses aren't just bearing the burden of white supremacy. This series is the testament that they are rising up and embodying the change they seek.
It's been difficult to sit in spaces where the people on the other side of the table aren't quite ready to hear what you have to say.
Right.
But you know you have to say it.
If Black care does matter, then the care for these nurses undeniably matters. Join us wherever you get your podcast.
Hello, my name is TK Kapurai, and I'm an immigrant from Zimbabwe. I'm the host of The Global Cell, which airs live in the Air Room the first Wednesday of the month at 7 p.m. I host immigrants and refugees from various global spots. I like to bring out their lived experiences so the world can know something about them. I like to bring a lot through my guests so we may have diverse experiences, cultures, foods, music, interests, and anything on the platform. We can share and learn a lot through their live instructions. Let's do this together, not only for a better platform for our community, but a better community for our platform. Again, tune in for my show, The Global Cell, live in the Air Room, the first Wednesday of the month at 7 p.m. here on KBOO 90.7 FM Portland, and also available on the web at kboo.fm.
You're listening to KBOO's All Thrills, No Frills Volume 3 Special Programming Campaign. Check out all the great special programs we're bringing you in February and March at kboo.fm/thrills. Help us reach our goal of $22,000 by March 16th. You could go to kboo.fm/give or text us. Type in KBOO to the number 44321. For the thrill of it all, keep listening.
Pacifica Radio in San Francisco. This is Flashpoints. I'm Dennis Bernstein. Today on the show, Greg Palast is back with another edition of the Election Crimes Bulletin and the latest breaking news in the battle to protect your vote. Trump goes to trial and Fannie Willis stars in her own local soap opera. Also, should Joe Biden run again? we'll feature a special call-in. We want you to call in. Special call-in, second half of the show, co-hosted with Norman Solomon of Roots Action, to hear what you think about what's going on in this world. And do you want Joe Biden back for another round? And, of course, we will check in with Miguel Gabriel Molina, get an update on the immigrants' rights caravan. They're moving right along. We're going to have a special with them on Monday, actually. All this and more coming up straight ahead on Flashpoint. Stay tuned. To Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein. This is your daily investigative news magazine. We're coming to you from the San Francisco Bay Area every weekday from 5 to 6 over the Pacifica Radio Network. We are happy to have you along today, and we are happy to welcome back Greg Palast and the Electric Crimes Bulletin. Electric Election Go.
This whole election is being rigged. The election is being rigged.
It's totally rigged.
Yes, Donald, it's rigged because your cronies rigged it.
So says Rolling Stone investigative reporter Greg Palast.
You're removing black voters from the voter rolls just so you can win this election?
We will treat those people from January 6th fairly. And if it requires pardons, we will give them pardons.
So you didn't call him, but you challenged his right to vote or have his ballot challenged.
Sir, get out of my house.
Okay, I will get out of your house. I just...
Now.
It's now time for your Election Crimes Bulletin with Greg Palast.
And this is Dennis Bernstein with Greg Palast on Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. There has been a lot going on. I hear, Greg, that Trump today was at a sneaker convention or something. This weekend, I guess, is coming up. He certainly can be pretty sneaky, but there's been a lot going on. Let's start, unfortunately, tragically, I have to say, with the case of Fannie Willis. I don't know if you saw her testifying yesterday. She didn't come back for another round of beatings today. Should she be removed? Will she be removed? What do you think, Greg?
Well, should she be removed? Okay, here's the issue. Fannie Willis, who is the prosecutor, the district attorney for Fulton County, which is Atlanta's big county, and she's the one who brought the really brilliantly written RICO indictment against Trump and his gang, who created a set of false electors to misvote Georgia's electoral votes and give the election to Donald Trump. So it's a racketeering case under Georgia state law. If Trump gets convicted, he can still serve as president, but it's he will be serving from the big house instead of the White House. Now, the problem is that for chief prosecutor, Fannie Willis hired her boyfriend, a guy named Nicholas Wade. Utterly incompetent, not with zero experience in this type of case. She's paid him so far, we know, at least $600,000, moving up to $1 million. I saw some of their billings. He billed, like, for example, 24 hours in a day. This is just, it's insane what happened. So this came out because Wade divorced his wife, and by the way, Fani signed the contract with her boyfriend the day after he filed for divorce, suggesting that she was trying to manipulate the divorce settlement by saying this money wasn't part of the divorce. Clearly, if you're going to commit a crime, just don't get involved with someone's ex-wife. And that's what happened here. So now, should she be removed from the case? A claim was made by Giuliani's lawyers, who is a defendant in the case, Rudy Giuliani, and another defendant in the case, saying that this creates a conflict of interest in the prosecutor's office. Therefore, Fani Willis and her boyfriend and her entire office should be removed from the case. Now, that's quite unusual. First of all, I can tell you that if two lawyers from the same law firm are on the same team would be removed, if their law firm would be disqualified simply because two lawyers on the same team got it on together, I can tell you from my experience in law firms, there would be no cases brought to trial. even if Willis hired her boyfriend and broke the law thereby, so what? That does not affect whether the district attorney's office should be disqualified. However, I should say that this judge, who was skeptical of this claim at the beginning, may decide, in fact, that Willis and her boyfriend, and therefore their whole office, has got to go because of the smell of criminality and likely perjury. And I think the judge is not going to like it. Specifically, Fani and her cookie made the claim that they didn't have relations, as Medea would put it, didn't have relations until March of 2024. But one of her friends was forced to testify, who had worked with her, that in fact that they had had a relationship long before March of 2024. In other words, before he was hired. So she hired her. So in other words, she did hire her boyfriend. She didn't get, the evidence seems clear that she didn't have a relationship with him after he was hired, but that they had a relationship before. And it's a reasonable assumption that he was hired because he was providing personal services to her. And I think,
Greg, I keep slapping myself in the face trying to understand why a seasoned prosecutor.
Well, Dennis, let's put it this way.
And was this guy a great? Was he such a great guy? This guy who she hired, her boyfriend, that he was so good at what he did that she really wanted to win.
Here's the problem, is that she even testified that he's a sexist and a terrible person. I mean, it's ridiculous. Here's the big problem is, number one, the case is now no longer about Donald Trump's corruption, but about the black Democrat prosecutor's corruption. And that's not good. So the jury pool is listening to this. The public was listening to this, and it feeds into the narrative that this is just a BS case just brought for political reasons and to build Fani Willis's career. And she did dumb things like go on MSNBC and talk about the case. Jack Smith doesn't do any of that. That's the federal prosecutor. So Fani Willis has been nothing but a political troll. There's no question she's using this case to build her own career. That doesn't mean that the case is wrong against Trump. As we've talked, I thought that the racketeering case was brilliantly put together. However, you do have a tremendous problem in that, I was the technical advisor in the first big racketeering case in Georgia against the big power company, Southern. These are complex cases. This guy, her boyfriend, Wade, his previous background is divorce cases. He's an ambulance chaser. You know, you get in a car wreck, you know, the 800 lawsuit guys. That's the stuff he did, divorces and car wrecks. And he's suddenly doing the number one felony racketeering criminal case in the nation.
against the
you're
president
kidding me,
of the
Fonny.
United States?
You're kidding me, Fonny. And here's the problem. What happens, Dennis, if the judge does get peeved and say, you guys are ridiculous, I don't like this. This does show a problem within the prosecutorial team. At that point, it not only disqualifies Fonny Willis, who should have been doing the case herself, by the way. She's a great trial lawyer. Not only does it exclude Fonny Willis and her cookie, Nathan Waite, but if she waits to resign until a decision comes down, her entire office is removed from the case. And it's turned over to the state of Georgia. Guess who's governor? Brian Kemp. It's turned over to the office of the special prosecutor of the state of Georgia, to a Republican named Pete Scandalakis. Now, Pete Scandalakis was already supposed to make some rulings to provide a prosecutor for one of the people who has been indicted, one of the 19 indicted by Willis. And he's dawdled like a year and still hasn't put together a prosecutor. This guy's clearly a foot dragger, and if it goes that way, one of two things are going to happen. He'll hire a prosecutor who will say, a Republican prosecutor will say, this case is BS and drop the whole thing, in which case Trump and Giuliani and gang are completely off the hook. Or from the experience with the Scandalakis, that he will simply hold off choosing a prosecutor until, say, after the election. So either way, if the only thing I see possible to salvage this case against Trump, and there should be a case against Trump, is for Fonny Willis and Nathan Waite to immediately resign. And I don't mean just resign from the case. Fonny Willis has to resign from office. She's corrupt, thoroughly, through and through. She should be in prison. I don't say that thing that lightly. But this is a case of malfeasance, misuse of public funds. This is a woman, Dennis, who put school teachers in prison for the felony crime of giving some of their students answers to standardized tests. She put them in prison with felony records. What she has done is 10 times worse than what she's imprisoned other people for. You know, really using the public funds to hire her boyfriend and jeopardizing the most important case in the country. I mean,
and remind people, yeah. Greg, remind people, we're talking about the one, can't you get me some votes? This was an attempt from the top down to tilt the election, right? This is huge. This is such an unbelievable. How many times have we heard that sound? Can you just find me a few votes?
Yes, that itself would not put the man in jail. What will put him in jail, if this case goes through and it's properly prosecuted, is that he was involved with Rudy Giuliani and the rest of those and the other defendants in this racketeering case in creating a slate of electors to the Electoral College, and who were never elected by the people. You can't just make up a slate of people and send it and then say, have Mike Pence read it out and make me president. That's a crime on its face. And that's why it's such a shame that Willis, who brought a brilliant case, should have, you know, as soon as, you know, we see this with male prosecutors. We, you know, after all, the prosecutor, you have two attorney generals of New York in a row who had to resign over this type, you know, not keeping their zippers closed. And so as we have women in greater positions of power, they're going to act like men. Why should we expect women to act different than men? You know, and they're using their offices.
I can think of 10 reasons, but I won't bother you now. Well, I can think of 10 reasons why, but I guess, all right. So now let's stay with the Democrats and the investigations. Yes. You mentioned the special prosecutor. Now, as far as that goes, we've got non compos mentis as attorney general. Why in the world would he wait 1 year? Everybody knew. We all were talking about this way back. You don't get into this. You don't take on Trump right away. We're in an election, and he might just get to walk and pardon himself. And here we are, looking down the barrel of time.
ironically, you know, while Trump was screaming, these are political prosecutions, these are political prosecutions, I actually think it was the lack of prosecution which was political. I think that our attorney general under Biden, Merrick Garland, deliberately slow walked asking for a special counsel. It should have been done immediately. His office should not have been handling this matter. The day after the inauguration, he should have said, look, I'm not touching this. This goes to special counsel, Jack Smith. Boom. It would be done. The trial would be over. And if Trump was convicted, which the evidence is pretty strong, he would be barred. He'd have time to appeal, but not enough time before the election, and he'd be barred from office. However, because I believe it was a political decision to slow walk the investigation. What, they didn't see the tapes from January 6th in 2021? They didn't see they didn't know what happened. They just discovered this activity, this crime. I'm sorry, but you're absolutely right. And by the way, I do want to make one point, Dennis, if I may, that Fani Willis keeps hiding behind the fact that she keeps claiming that the attack on her and Wade are because they are black. And to me, it was disgusting that she went to a black church on Martin Luther King Day to say she was only being prosecuted or persecuted for being black, and that they didn't question her hiring the two other white attorneys on her team. But there's no evidence that they are incompetent, and there's no evidence that she slept with them. So, you know, let's get away from she's being picked on because she's black or a woman or anything else. So I think, you know, once again, she needs to save this case, she and Wade need to resign. And the county board in Fulton needs to say we're keeping our team, the other two members, in place, and they will take over the case. And judges kind of like that, because otherwise this whole case gets kicked away for months while you have a new team. And, of course, that goes past the election.
All right. You're listening to the Election Crimes Bulletin with Greg Palast. I'm Dennis Bernstein. We try and do this regularly. Greg has been out working on a bunch of stuff, and we're going to get to that in a moment. But let's stay with Trump. $350 million in penalties coming out of New York, and that trial with the porno queen is coming up. So what should we think about that? Are these important cases?
Well, I mean, a couple of years ago, Trump was completely broke. I mean, before he ran for president, he had a negative net worth, according to my calculations, with my friends from D.C. Report, who really know this stuff. But, you know, he did turn the White House into a profit center, and his assets have gone up. So the about $380 million penalty he'll have to pay to the state of New York, he'll probably raise it, as he's done elsewhere. He'll raise it from the Trumps, you know, from his, instead of spending money on his campaign, because he's winning anyway, he's collecting money for his defense and his penalties. He's going to have to pay $85 million about to the other libel action where he added a libel on top of a libel saying that the woman he raped, he didn't rape her again, so the judge got mad. That's another $85 million. It's piling up towards half a billion. We've got the hush money case. Now, that's a criminal case. I don't know how that will ultimately end up. But that won't affect his ability to run or serve as president. There is the case of the documents where he not only took confidential documents, but the main thing people misunderstand, it's not the same as Biden taking confidential documents. I don't want to let Joe Biden off the hook, but there's a big difference. Donald Trump deliberately lied to the FBI, deliberately lied to the National Archives. That's real serious stuff, lying to the FBI and the National Archives. That's a fraud upon the government. That is a serious crime. Whether you keep a few papers or not, also he lied about the fact that he gave them all back, et cetera, et cetera. That's serious. And if that prosecution succeeds, it'll be a Florida jury. And Jack Smith is bringing that case. If that case succeeds, Trump cannot be president if the case concludes, including all appeals, before he becomes president. If he becomes president, that is inaugurated, not just elected, if he becomes president, then he'll pardon himself. And then we have besides, we've already gone through the racketeering case in Georgia, but we have the big criminal case, which is, did he attempt to undermine the process of the Constitution and overturn the election on the federal, that's the federal case brought by Jack Smith. That definitely would bar him from holding office, but I don't know how, like you say, since Merrick Garland, our Attorney General, dawdled, I have no idea whether it'll be finished in time. And if Trump's elected, of course, he pardons himself.
It's amazing. You're listening to Flashpoints. That's Greg Palast. We're happy to have him back. Greg, let's talk a little bit about what you've been up to when you haven't been around. Tell us about your recasting Vigilante film, great film, so it's getting better. And what else are you doing?
Two things. One, because as we discussed, I think, months ago, the last time I was on, which is that the law has been changed. Federal law, a court has ruled that Vigilante challenges in the hundreds of thousands are not illegitimate. In other words, we had that system that we exposed in the film Vigilante, which stopped these mass challenges of voters. Literally 300,000 voters were challenged their right to vote in Georgia, mostly black voters. And the challenges were by GOP officials. And the list was given to them by a group called True the Vote. True the Vote was sued, and True the Vote prevailed. Now, is that an ultimate authorization of these Vigilante challenges? No, there may still be some ways to get around that legally. But at the moment, this thing is now spread. True the Vote is now organizing challenges of, it looks like, about 1 million voters. Arizona, Texas, Georgia, Pennsylvania, Iowa, Missouri, and this absolutely, Wisconsin, this could absolutely change the outcome of the 2024 election. So therefore, we're expanding our film Vigilante, which never got its commercial release, into Vigilantes, Inc., America's Vote Suppression Hitmen, so we can take our film out of Georgia alone and make it national, because the threat is now national. So that's one of my two films.
Good idea. Just to be clear, so now what you're, the law change, is that you can, one person can challenge a zillion people that they don't even know. And
well,
get
as you know, we had
voting.
In Georgia, in Vigilante, we have the one case of Pam Reardon, who is a Georgia Republican Party official, personally challenged 36,000 voters. I mean, obviously, and she said to me, I don't know these people. I said, did you call any of them to see if, get any information? How can I call 36,000 people? Well, you can't, so why are you challenging their right to vote? But this was found. No court has yet ruled that this is wrong, and one court has ruled that, at least in a civil case, that the people that came up with this nasty hit list, by the way, none of the people on their list, and I'm saying none, are proven to be illegal voters. And so we're going to see 1 million voters challenged, almost all of them young voters, Democrats, in particular voters of color, will be challenged and have been. It's real, real serious. So that's why we're making the national film to be released in fall before this election.
And talk about the Osage Indians and the other project.
Yes. So the other is that I'm working on is in Killers of the Flower Moon, which is up for Best Picture and several other awards for the Oscars. That's a film about the Osage Indians.
Very powerful. I've seen it.
It's very powerful film. I think it's DiCaprio's best acting job ever, Leonardo DiCaprio. But the film ends about 1924. That is 100 years ago. The Osage have made the point, and they love, by the way, the Osage Nation leadership love Killers of the Flower Moon. And I resent all the attacks on it that somehow this is an insult to the Osage. They virtually wrote the film. It's their people playing themselves in the film. It's their story. I can tell you, because I work with the Osage leadership and have for many years, to them this was an extraordinarily positive thing, where they got, as Chief Standing Bear says, this is our story, and we got the world's best director, Martin Scorsese, to tell it for us. But they want another story told. What's happened to them in the last 100 years? And for most of that last 100 years, they've been fighting a company called Coke Oil, in particular Charles Coke, and who stole their oil, billions of dollars of oil from their property. These people had no money in the 50s. Coke Oil was, the Bureau of Indian Affairs allowed Coke Oil to take out their oil out of the reservation, and then turned out they weren't paying for it. They stole billions. And so I am doing the story of the Osage, Coke Oil, and what's happened to them in the last 100 years, including their very current fight with the Bureau of Indian Affairs. And they've all, Bureau of Indian Affairs, over control of their property. Right now, there are 16,000 abandoned oil wells on their property that the big oil majors, I'm talking about Conoco and Sinclair and Exxon and Phillips, left thousands of abandoned wells spewing methane into the atmosphere, which is it's the most methane of anywhere spewing out of American soil. And they're stuck with the poisons. They want to close and clean up these holes that the oil companies left, and they need control. They need to take back control of their reservation from the U.S. government. So I'm trying to tell that story. The film is called Long Knife, The Osage Nation, Coke Oil, and the New Trail of Tears. You can watch the trailers at gregpalast.com. That's G-R-E-G-P-A-L-A-S-T, gregpalast.com, where you can watch the trailers for Long Knife. And the reason it's called it, because they're called Long Knife because the Bureau of Indian Affairs supervisors that were basically overlords of the Osage tribe and their lands always used to, in years past, they used to carry swords. So the Osage called them Mahita, which means long knife, because they're carrying swords. And they've kind of kept this attitude that this is the long knife, which is always at our throat, stealing our money, letting other people kill us, letting other people steal our money, letting other people, like the Kochs, steal our oil, and today leaving us with the filth and poisons, and now that's our problem. Thank you. So they've had it, and they want this story told, and therefore George DiCaprio, Leonardo's dad, is my producer with the support and help of Leonardo, to make a film about a documentary about these last 100 years. So you get the full story. It goes with Killers. I want everyone to see Killers and then see what's happened to the Osage in these past 100 years. And that'll be out, we don't know when, you know, this is Hollywood, but we're finishing it now.
Beautiful. Greg, thank you for joining us again for the Election Crimes Bulletin. We always appreciate your presence, and the work is crucial, obviously, and it continues. We will continue with the Election Crimes Bulletin, Greg Palast. You can check him out at gregpalast.com. The new film, I know, is going to be spectacular, and the new version of the old film is going to be worthy and necessary. We always, always feel really privileged to have you for our audiences. So take care, Greg. Take care. Come back soon. We'll talk to you again.
Thanks for the opportunity, Dennis. Bye.
You're welcome. And you are listening to a show called Flashpoints. It's on Pacifica Radio. You hear us every weekday from 5 to 6 over the Pacifica Radio Network. We are your electronic leaflet in the airwaves, and we are happy to be free speech, no holds barred, non-corporate, truth to power radio. What we're going to do, we're going to take a short musical break. When we come back, we're going to have a special call-in, and I really hope that you will call in. And we are going to be talking about whether you think it's a good idea for Joe Biden to run for another term, or should he step down, step aside, as Roots Action is asking, for a different candidate. That's what we're going to be talking about with our good friend Norman Solomon. So prepare to call. I will give out the number in a moment. Don't have it now, but will soon. Stay tuned. Listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. The war continues. Let me just share this latest terrifying bit of information coming from Al Jazeera now. They have satellite photographs that show the construction, major construction on the Egyptian border with Gaza. It says satellite images show Egypt leveling land and building a wall along its border with the Gaza Strip near the Rafah crossing. The construction suggests Egypt is preparing for a possible influx of displaced Palestinians amid fears that Israel's planned ground invasion of Rafah could push thousands across the line. And I add that that is obviously the concept from the get-go in terms of Netanyahu and his vision for really purging Gaza and Palestine of Palestinians. And it's all happening with the extraordinary support, the unflinching support, I should say, of the President of the United States, who's the number one recipient of Israeli lobby AIPAC money. Joining us to talk about this and help us take your call so that we can have a little conversation is our good friend Norman Solomon. He is the co-founder of Roots Action. He's a wonderful author, media critic, founder of the Institute for Public Accuracy, and he has been trying to stand against war for a long time. Norman, welcome back to Flashpoints. Your sort of reaction, your take on where we are now in what is clearly an expanding genocide.
Where we are in the fifth month of this, what I think is fair to call mass murder of Palestinian civilians in Gaza, is that it continues apace. And despite all of the escalating humanitarian rhetoric coming from the Biden administration, the enabling is continuous. The top enabler of this mass slaughter in Gaza is the U.S. government. And when we look at what has actually taken place, even people in the U.S. Congress, with very few exceptions, even those who have condemned what Israel is doing, have refused to vote against arming these folks to do even more of the mass murder in Gaza. So we have this huge disconnect between a recognition that this terrible mass murder is going on every single day and the failure of anyone in a powerful position in the U.S. Congress or the President of the United States to actually take commensurate action, which would be a complete cutoff of military equipment, weapons, and ammunition. And I should just add, Dennis, that from all accounts, the killing that is going on every day in Gaza would be impossible without the military shipments that continue from the U.S. government.
It is extraordinary that, and they included those shipments, these 2,000-pound bunker busters that they drop on people who have nowhere to run and have nothing left to even hide under. It's hard to tell how many people have died. The estimates are now that we've broken 30,000 and tens of thousands of more wounded under the rubble and on the run. Let me give out the number. I want to have you talk a little bit more, Norman, about the logic around a different person running for president. And there's lots of stuff and lots of fears about that. Let me give out the number. 1-800-958-9008. If you have something to say about whether you think it's a good idea for Biden to stay the Democratic candidate in the next election, re-election, for him it would be, or do you think it's time for him to step down, to step aside, as Roots Action is suggesting? Again, the number is 1-800-958-9008. 1-800-958-9008. And the word on the street, on the American street from the Democrats, is it's insane to even think about changing candidates in midstream. Biden is strong. Yes, he's not doing that well in the polls, but we haven't seen anything yet. And they're going to pour $1 zillion in, and the Democrats are going to turn the tide.
Well, that's the spin within the Democratic Party hierarchy and its bubble. But the bubble is getting much smaller, and the mass media are now often, just in the last few weeks, especially after his terrible performance, after the release of the report that was issued just recently that caused Biden to do a terrible performance at a news conference, more and more, the wisdom in the mass media is not anymore that, you know, Biden is a good candidate, but that Biden is a bad candidate, but we're stuck. And I have to say that, as with the Roots Action campaign, first called Don't Run Joe more than a year ago, now called Step Aside Joe, and many times, Dennis, on Flashpoints, we have talked during the last year about, on the basis of his policies and his capacity to run against the likely candidate of the Republican Party, the fascistic Donald Trump, he's not up to the job. And so we were premature anti-Bidenists, so to speak. And now we are in a situation where the conventional wisdom is, okay, he's a bad candidate, but we've got to stick with him. It's really not too late, but we need action because time is short.
Okay, the number is 1-800-958-9008. Let's take our first caller whose name we didn't get. Caller, you were on from the South Bay in the San Francisco Bay Area. Oh, who's calling? What's your name?
Joe.
Hi, Joe. Oh, so what do you think?
I think Biden should stay in it. I think he's too old, right? But I would rather vote for that guy and have him die in office, God forbid, a couple years into it, than vote for Trump, because he's gonna cause a civil war. The guy, it's just not gonna work with that guy. He's got no one to check him on the second term. He can do whatever he wants, and he's only in it for himself.
But are you concerned that Biden, his his prospects are not looking good and they've been getting worse by the day?
Yeah, but who else are you going to put up against him?
Norman, this is what I hear all the time, Norman. Thank you, caller.
These are good questions, and I think we need to look at Biden's performance when the special counsel report was released just a couple of weeks ago. And when that report came out saying that he had significant memory problems, the damage control was to quickly do a news conference in which he made matters much worse. He confused the head of state of Mexico and Egypt. He was faulty. He was faltering. And so I would agree, you know, as the lawyers say, I would stipulate to the point that the caller is making that we've got to prevent Trump from getting back into the White House. He is neo-fascistic. No, he is fascistic now more and more. It's clear. A question is, what's the way to do that? And Biden is a very weak candidate, and it's not too late to get somebody better.
Okay. 1-800-958-9008. Want to get some of the women in the audience. I'm told that mostly women listen to this show. Please call and tell us what you think. 1-800-958-9008. John, join us from the North Bay. Thank you. What's on your mind?
Oh, hi, Dennis. As always, a good show. You're just fantastic. I agree with everything Norman has said, but I with the last caller, I think he is correct. I think it is too late to run a major candidate at this point. Maybe not. But I'd like to see Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders and the best of the Democrats come out and support Joe Biden and reassure people that they are right behind him with policy, with all that. His Israel policy is wrong. I agree, and we should commit to rebuilding. I don't hear this. I mean, the hostilities aren't over, but we need to start talking about rebuilding. Anyway, that's my comment. Oh, and Kamala Harris is right there beside him if he does have a health crisis. Thank you.
Thank you for your call, Norman.
Yeah, thank you. You're quite right that it would be good to reassure people about Joe Biden, but how does one reassure someone who is unable to articulate clearly and who has backed up and supported a policy of mass slaughter in Gaza? This is not a small thing. It's a major thing. It's a huge moral issue, and it's a huge political issue. The polling is showing that demographics that Biden desperately needs to get reelected are strongly against what he is doing with Gaza and with Israel, particularly young people. It has been a plummeting. He has taken a nosedive in support from young voters because of his immoral policy that is backing up what Israel is doing to Palestinian human beings in Gaza. So this should not fly. We must not accept it.
We're taking calls at 800-958-9008. That's 1-800-958-9008. We're taking calls about whether you think that folks, the Democrats should stay with Joe Biden as their candidate for president against Trump, or it's a better idea to find a candidate who might be more coherent and more progressive as well, and a candidate that might not be rushing these 2,000-pound bombs to drop on the dust of what's left of Gaza. Mike from Oakland, join us at 1-800-958-9008. Mike?
Yeah, thank you, Dennis. Thank you for the program.
You're welcome.
I don't look at things quite this way, that it's about who to get the best candidate for the Democrats. I think the Democratic Party itself, and not not letting the Republicans off, but the Democrats are in charge now, and they're all behind this genocide that's going on. And I think, as was stated earlier, it's entirely correct that This could not go forward, what's been happening in Gaza, and is going to happen if we don't do something quickly. That's a consensus position. I mean, Bernie Sanders and Markley and another senator, I think also from Vermont, were the only three Democrats who voted against this package to get, another $10 billion to Israel to have more, to kill more Palestinians. I think the problem is bigger than Biden, and this is how I feel. I've gone for this lesser and two evil stuff, as we all had to for many years. But you got to draw a line somewhere, and my red line is I will not support anybody. I don't care if they're Democrat, Republican, what they are, if they are engaging in enabling genocide. We have to draw the line there. And until Biden and the Democrats don't get it still, they need to get the message they're going to lose if they don't stop this. And stop blaming everybody else and Netanyahu. He's not the president of the United States. Joe Biden is. And to me, that's my priority. I want to see this stop. And without the American weapons and munitions that are being shipped as we speak, all the talk is just hot air. That's what's going on. Until that stops, this is not going to stop in Gaza. So that's where I'm coming from.
Thank you,
Larry.
Go on, Norman.
Yeah, you make some great points, I wanted to say. And everybody listening to us, if you're within the United States of America, you have two senators, unless you're a colony of Washington, D.C., and don't have senators. Otherwise, you have two senators and a voting representative in the House of Representatives. You should be raising hell with your congressperson and with your senators. You should be insisting that they stop being enablers for this genocide in Gaza. I would add that it was even $14 billion that was just approved by the Senate, and the three people in the Democratic caucus who voted against were Bernie Sanders and another Vermont Senator Welch, and then Jeff Merkley of Oregon, which means we have dozens of other senators who have refused to take the most minimal decent stand.
You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We're talking about whether you think Joe Biden should run again or step down and make room for perhaps a younger person, somebody who's more in touch, and somebody who's not. Just the bottom line is somebody who's not supporting actively a genocide, and that's what it's been called by many countries now, and that movement is emerging. We're taking calls at 1-800-958-9008. A good time to call, by the way, is when somebody hangs up. But we're taking calls at 1-800-958-9008. Larry, join us on Flashpoints. You're on the air.
Good evening. Good evening, Dennis.
Norman. Good evening.
If looking down the road to what's going to become of the Palestinians that are left after this atrocity, if there are any left, what solution is there? I hear Biden and the Democrats talking about a two-state solution. Where are the two states going to be? I don't see anywhere you're going to put a Palestinian state. I think we really should look seriously at a one-state solution. I think that the Palestinian people and the Jewish Israelis could form a very dynamic partnership. The best characteristics of both people could make a really powerful and productive and culturally beautiful society. You know, they're already not that far apart when you look at language, at cuisine, at music. You know, they're cousins after all. And, you know, I know how ugly family arguments can get, but eventually you got to realize that you are family, you love each other, and I don't see any viable solution but a one-state solution.
Thank you, Larry, and a belated happy Valentine's Day. You touched my heart. We're taking calls at 1-800-958-9008. You want to respond to that, Norman, quickly?
Yes, the two-state solution that keeps being invoked is a fig leaf that we've been hearing about for decades while Palestinians have been pushed into smaller and smaller geographical areas, Bantustans in the West Bank, subjected to harassment and killings not only by the Israeli government but by armed settlers with a wink and a nod and assistance from the Israelis. We need a sea change in policy, and that has to come from the United States, because the United States is an accomplice to this oppression and to this mass murder.
Absolutely. RJ in San Jose, join us at 1-800-958-9008. RJ, take it.
Oh, hi, guys. Thanks. Great program. Just, I have to disagree with almost everyone's position so far, and that is any kind of alternative candidate to Joe Biden at this point, but maybe not even at this point, maybe earlier, means President Trump, President Haley, or President DeSantis. And if your listeners think that, say, President Trump would take a different position to arming Israel, I think they're delusional. Those are as delusional as the MAGA people. I mean, if you think that the arms dealers aren't slavering over arming Israel, wait until you hear about the evangelical Christians. You know, a cataclysmic apocalypse in Israel is part of their end times fantasy. Trump loves that sort of stuff. So if you really, really think that President Trump is going to save the Palestinians in Gaza, I'm telling you, that is completely nuts. The only way Biden doesn't win this election is if he passes away before the election. And if the people that are calling in have a concern about his age, you know, they should listen to Lawrence O'Donnell about Franklin Delano Roosevelt's fourth term. Now, the guy was practically dead from polio, and he got more accomplished than any Republican ever will. So this idea of a progressive candidate, most of the progressive candidates that have the very progressive positions on Gaza will never get elected in this environment in the United States.
Okay, thank you, RJ. You made the point, and it's strong. We appreciate it. I want to give out the number. I can't see the number. I want to give out the number, and then I want to let you respond briefly. The number we're taking calls at is 1-800-958-9008, and I just want to let you know that we're going to come to you next, Donna in Santa Monica. But, Norman, you want to take a quick shout at what we just heard?
Yeah, I haven't heard anybody on this program say they want Donald Trump to be elected president. That's off the table. On the contrary, we want to stop Donald Trump from being elected president. And the question is, when you look at the polling numbers, like on the 538 website and the aggregate of the polls, Biden is in underwater territory that is virtually unprecedented. His plus minus is 17% minus. His polling is atrocious. And so if you want to set aside his role in assisting every day the mass murder of Palestinian civilians, just look at the polling. He's an extremely weak candidate, and Trump wants him to be the nominee.
Yeah. Donna from Santa Monica, join us on Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio.
Hello, I'm happy to be with you. I don't know quite where the conversation is right now. I walked into my kitchen with the phone, and the radio is in the back room, but I have a lot of feelings and thoughts about the situation there.
I think
that in my life I have never been this horrified before, and I was horrified during Vietnam, sitting at my grandmother's house and watching people come in and body bags, and I was horrified when Kennedy was assassinated, and that was God awful in this country. But right now, today, I am so horrified. I cannot believe the tidbit that I heard from you earlier, which was that a number of people in Congress don't support this situation, and yet they're unwilling to vote or speak up for a ceasefire. Is that true? How can any people be so defective and devoid of any, not just morality, but feeling for human life?
Well, it's a great and important question. I'd give as an example one of the best senators on this issue, which is a low bar. Chris Van Hollen of Maryland gave a moving speech Monday night on the floor of the Senate. He'd gotten back from Gaza. He said, "This is absolutely textbook." He said, "It is a textbook war crime, what Israel is doing." And hours later, he voted in favor of $14 billion more of military aid from the United States government to Israel. This is the fear that so many members of Congress have, and we, from the grassroots, have got to organize and raise hell to change this around.
Yeah, well, Norman, I want to thank you for joining us today. We're out of time. There was an action over the weekend, I believe, and fake blood was poured on the door and the house and the car, I think, of Nancy Pelosi. People are facing some serious charges on that. We're going to see if we can do something. We're going to follow that story very closely. But 30 seconds, Norman, on Pelosi and the power structure. That's holding anybody who disagrees.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Tune in to KBOO throughout February, every Tuesday at 7 p.m. for Black History Future Month, our special programming series in celebration of Black heritage. This series